Executive Director, Serum Institute of India Limited, Suresh Jadhav. And our moderator, Associate Arnold and Porter, host and producer, The African World TV, Kwame Clement.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our discussion, Vaccines, Expanding Access and Fostering Innovation. 3 weeks ago, I visited Africa, the land of my birth. I was required to take with me my yellow book certifying that I had been inoculated against many diseases, including yellow fever, for example. That experience brought a number of reminders to me. First, on a personal level, of how wise my parents were, despite misinformed rumors about the dangers vaccine posed, to enroll me in various immunization campaigns in Liberia where I grew up. Those campaigns were not conducted, as here in the United States, in neat and tidy clinics and hospitals and schools. They were out in the open, dusty fields, where I, along with my colleagues, stood on long lines that ended under huge mango trees, where health workers sat. On the one hand, they scared us with the syringes in their hand. On the other hand, they attracted us with a candy bar in the other hand that we were giving as rewards. No matter the difference in settings in the United States and other developed countries where vaccines are carried out, immunization campaigns, and in the third world, the results are the same. They enable young children, enhance their chances of surviving early childhood diseases, and the possibility of leading productive lives. On a broader level, that experience reminded me that it's easy to forget that but for the immunological power of vaccines, we still will be confronted with many diseases, you know them, that killed millions of people just a few decades ago. Despite the successes of vaccines, and despite the fact that since 200 years since it was first introduced, it has proven to be a powerful medical intervention in the fight against diseases, many of the critical issues that attended its early births are still with us. How to increase accessibility for vaccines that already exist. How to prepare developing countries to take advantage of vaccines that will come online in the next 5 years or so. How to accelerate the development of vaccines that are desperately needed to confront new emerging diseases. Those are the issues we hope to discuss today. With your active participation, we may not find dead bang answers to all of them, but we can contribute, I believe, in a meaningful way to the ongoing international conversation about these issues. More important, I believe what we say here today can inspire or should inspire all of us to take actions as ordinary citizens, opinion leaders, business leaders, managers of charitable organizations and businesses to make the commitment and spur others to do the same, commitment of resources, time and effort to make sure that the promise of vaccine is realized, low-cost, affordable tool to prevent diseases and improve health and living standards around the world. It is fitting that to do so today, we have three people imminently involved in vaccine work, familiar with the promise and challenge inherent in making vaccines available and accessible. Alice Albright has done innovative work involving financing to bring vaccines online, particularly relevant for our purposes. She has been leading since 2003 the International Financing Facility for Immunization that seeks over the next 10 years or so to raise $4 billion in the private equities market to ensure the development of vaccines we desperately need. Welcome, Alice.
Thank you.
Alice's work in securing financing for vaccines is matched by the work of our next panelist, Suresh Jadhav, on the ground in third world countries, actively involved in manufacturing vaccines where they are needed the most in the third world. He leads the Serum Institute of India, the world's largest producers of measles and DTP vaccines. He's also put his organization literally on the world map, winning for it accreditation from the World Health Organization and ensuring that it's a major supplier of vaccines to United Nations agencies. Suresh, it's our pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And finally, there is Seth Berkley, whose singular devotion is being AIDS, finding a vaccine for AIDS. As you heard, he leads the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative, brings tremendous background for academia and practical work on the ground in the health area. Adjunct professor of health at Columbia and Brown University, his alma mater, done work with the Rockefeller Foundation, the Center for Disease Control, and the Carter Center. Significantly, with respect to the Carter Center, he served at the Ministry of Health in Uganda, a country that, like many other countries in Eastern and Southern Africa, represent the epicenter in the fight against AIDS. So let's begin, Alice, and we probably should begin with you. Basics. Let's remind ourselves why we're here. Why are vaccines such important tools in preventing diseases in the developing world?
Well, thank you very much. I think it's actually a very straightforward answer. I think there's two parts to it. First of all, vaccines are very inexpensive. You see in your fact sheet that it costs $20 with the basic vaccines to deliver them. So that is obviously a very low number. When you add in some of the vaccines that are a little bit newer, the number goes up, of course, but it doesn't go up all that much. And so I think the major reason is cost effectiveness. I think the second one is really the sense of permanence, which is that once a child is vaccinated against a disease, the disease is dealt with. It's not something that presents an ongoing cost for that particular individual to the government. And so it really puts that person in a much more productive member to become a much more productive member of society. It's straightforward.
Yeah. And I think another point, maybe, Sue, as you should address that. I mean, you're involved in manufacturing, but you in India. I think to add on to what Alice said is that vaccine can also provide the opportunity for one-stop health shopping, as it were. It funnels people into the health system who otherwise wouldn't be brought in. You bring the kids a vaccine and you can do other things with them. Is that your experience on the ground in India?
See, unfortunately, in India, that's not the experience. Because even today, the total number of percentage of the vaccinees in India is, on an average, is not exceeding 60%. Although the Gavi goal is that we should achieve at least about 80% vaccination for the DPT-3, that is three doses of DPT, but that has not yet been achieved. Ironic part is that India is today the biggest hub of vaccine manufacturers. There are at least about 13 manufacturers, out of which four are WHO pre-qualified, and they supply almost about 75 to 80% requirement of the UN agencies, both for UNICEF as well as for the PAHO. These vaccines are used all over the globe in more than 150 countries, but in our own country, because of some political compulsions or some of the infrastructure deficiencies, these are not being used as they could have been used in normal circumstances.
Well, that raises a very important point, something we should get into right away. Goes to penetration, coverage, accessibility, meaning how we can get widespread use of vaccines that are available at the moment. Seth, you it's a specialist, but maybe I should force you to address this one, if you may.
Well, it's interesting because Alice already touched on this, but people always think about the cost of the vaccine. And it is not the cost of the vaccine, at least for the initial ones. I mean, the six of them together are under a dollar. It's the delivery costs that are critical. And although you have an average number on your fact sheet, that ranges somewhere between $25 and $45, depending upon labor costs, et cetera. So the real challenge has been is how do you extend the system out to the rural areas? How do you have mobile clinics in places that, you know, people live far away? How do you deal with the cold chain and those other issues? And the work that Gavi has done to try to build up those systems has been incredible and is going to be the preparations for future vaccines that are going to come forth. Interestingly, though, some of the new vaccines, we heard a commitment today from Merck about taking their HPV vaccine forward into the developing world, those vaccines won't go through the same system necessarily because that particular vaccine will be adolescents. And so, as in HIV, other vaccines, we're going to have to start thinking about new systems. And so the challenge is how we pull them all together and use that not only for vaccines but for healthcare.
Alice, I'd like you to expound a little bit more on what you're doing, Gavi, that is, with respect to work on the ground in Africa to help with vaccine delivery. And in doing so, I'd like you, to the extent you can, to speak a little to what you're doing to develop capabilities, human capabilities in the various countries in Africa to ensure long-term sustainability once you've left or the people you have there have left.
Thank you. Let me answer I'd like to introduce our CEO who's sitting over there, who is a public health visionary, and I encourage many of you to get to know him. And he's been really pushing Gavi to think quite on a forward basis about health systems. Right now, Gavi principally delivers vaccines. Between 70 and 80% of the money that we spend is to buy vaccines, and it's many of the vaccines that you all are familiar with. But going forward, that mix is going to change, and we're increasingly starting to focus our program spending on what we call health system strengthening. And my expectation is over the next several years, we'll begin to deliver about one-third of our funds into health systems. That is a program that is actually quite unique for Gavi. What it is we invite all the countries that we work in, the 72 poorest countries of the world, to give us applications as to how they're going to develop their own health system programs. It's very important. It's very country-based and a lot of country ownership. We have a very rigorous monitoring process and evaluation process that determines what applications get funded. But then, of course, it's turned over to the countries. And so in terms of your question about capacity, I think one of the signature things about Gavi is that it is intended to deliver it, to develop financing and monitoring capacity on the ground.
Well, we've looked at why vaccines are important tools for preventing diseases in the developing world. We look at how, at least briefly, problems related to accessibility, how we can increase penetration. Maybe we should get into what I think is the meat of our discussion today. How do we get the next generation of vaccines we need online? AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, diseases that really sap productivity and the cause for poverty in many parts of the world still around without any vaccines. Alex, I'd like again to begin with you on this one. What's the problem? How can we get manufacturers, people to invest? What innovative financing mechanism we can put in place to attract people into developing these vaccines that we so desperately need?
Well, my colleagues here are very good spokesmen on that as well, so I hope I can share the floor with them. But let me talk about two things. One of the things that Gavi does, in addition to having a very strong program focus, is we work a lot on what we call innovative financing mechanisms. And there's two in particular that we're very excited about. One is called the International Finance Facility for Immunization. We launched this last year. Over time, it'll be a $4 billion funding program. We've launched the first billion of it last year. We're beginning to think about what the next steps are. But that allows us to issue long-term funding commitments to the countries and, where appropriate, to the pharmaceutical community. And that is a distinctive part of Gavi's business model. We are there for the long term. We have a very big and credible balance sheet. We manage it very carefully. And our stock in trade, as I call it, is our ability to issue these commitments. So that's one thing. And the IFM was really put us on the map from that perspective. Right now, I estimate about two-thirds of our overall balance sheet is committed for the long term. So that is significant for us. The second thing which we're working on now, which we hope to launch and really make a reality sometime, hopefully in the first quarter of next year, is what we call advanced market commitments. And we're doing this on a pilot basis for pneumococcal vaccine. We've put together, through the lots of work of a lot of people helping us, $1.5 billion of funding from five governments plus the Gates Foundation. And it's, in its detail, it's a rather complicated transaction, but if you look at it from 100,000 feet, it's a bit simpler. And what it involves is, for a period of time, with this funding, we'll be paying up to allow manufacturers to recoup the R&D costs for the vaccines that become eligible. It's important, eligible, and also demanded by the countries, in exchange for the manufacturers being willing to sell the vaccine to us after a certain period of time for a significantly reduced price. And so the advanced market commitment really does two important things for us. First of all, it gets us the vaccine faster. And we estimate with pneumococcal that it will get us the vaccine several years faster than otherwise would be the case. But then second of all, we wind up with something that is considerably more affordable than what it otherwise would have been. And if I'd say there's one goal of Gavi overall for the long term, it's affordability. So those are, I think, two important things that we're working on.
Thanks, Alice. We'll come back to talk a little bit more to the extent we have some time about advanced commitments and the line. But Seth, I'd like you to pick up here, particularly as it pertains to AIDS. It's such a huge burden, and we talk about market failure, that the market as it is can really sustain, you know, a market for vaccines for AIDS. Speak to that issue and speak to what your group or what you know is happening out there to get vaccines online for AIDS.
So let me start at the higher level. We talk about AIDS as a major disease. It is 39 million people infected, 70 plus million since the start of the epidemic. What we don't talk a lot about is the sustainability effort of the existing interventions. There was a new study that's coming out today, actually, from UNAIDS, looking at the G8 has made a commitment, access for all by 2010, and they've done some costing studies and suggest that if you ramped up and did that, you'd need to spend $55 billion a year alone in developing countries by 2015, not to mention what's being spent in the developed world. So the existing interventions, very expensive, and one of the reasons is for every person we put on treatment today, there are six new infections. So the epidemic goes on. We need better tools, and an AIDS vaccine is obviously the cost-effective tool for the reason we're talking about. AIDS, malaria, and TB, tough science. They're not the simple diseases. We don't have natural immunity. And so the real challenge has been how do you focus in on trying to solve the scientific challenges? And there isn't a market, and that's been one of the problems. There is a market. People obviously will make money on these candidates, but they're certainly AIDS is politically controversial. It's mostly in the developing world. There's been a lot of issues around it. And so there's not enough to drive massive expenditures into R&D, and that's why we need new mechanisms, push and pull, to drive these forward. The last point I want to make is that because these are going to require new science, this is not only about the large pharmaceutical companies who manufacture and have R&D programs, but it's about bringing biotechnology, small companies, new ideas into the fray here to do science. And that's where public-private partnerships, which exist for all AIDS, malaria, and TB, work with small companies, with groups, to try to drive forward innovative science to accelerate the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that science is hard. And the fact that science is hard was made all the more clear recently by the failure of the Merck AIDS vaccine trial. What are the implications for that failure?
You know, it's a tough issue. That candidate, we were unbelievably disappointed, as you can imagine, but it was not unexpected. And it, as a candidate, failed. The question is, does this mean that the class of candidates it came from, and that's operating on one arm of the immune system, the cellular arm, would fail? And that's something that will take some time to tease out. Merck scientists are working with colleagues at NIH and others to look at the data from that trial. And so one important point is, since we don't have a good animal model, at the end we have to go into human trials. And so it isn't really a failure. Obviously the vaccine failed. We will learn from this, and it will help us drive forward. Whether the class of vaccines are affected or just that particular one is something that will come out. But what's as important is that at the same time, people are looking at the other arm of the immune system, neutralizing antibodies, looking at mucosal vaccines, and so a whole range of other approaches. And the challenge is, same word that Alice did, is sustainability, how we keep this driving forward and not lose hope.
Okay. The fact that AIDS trials are carried out in Africa is understandable, given the prevalence of the disease there. But the fact that there are not many research on the ground in Africa is something I'd like us to address, because I think it can solve a lot of brain drain problem. I think it makes sense. You can test the vaccine right there and that kind of stuff. We'll come to that later. But talking about using third world countries for research, I'd like to talk to you, Suresh, a little bit about using third world countries for manufacturing vaccines, something you are doing. What is the role of third world countries in vaccine manufacturing? And what's your experience on the ground?
Yeah. See, I have got two hats. I represent Serum Institute, as well as I also represent the Developing Country Vaccine Manufacturers Network.
Two important positions.
Yes. And today I have got 28 members from all over the world, starting from China, Asia, to South America. We have got almost about 7 manufacturers who are pre-qualified, and today they are pre-qualified for the basic vaccines, but many of us have already made the conjugate vaccines. We have also made the pentavalent vaccines. That means the technology for making a conjugate vaccine has been already absorbed and put into use, and the vaccine is ready. This vaccine will now be offered to the UN agencies after it gets pre-qualified. And as far as other products are concerned, we have got a good relationship with PATH and WHO for collaboration for making a meningitis A conjugate vaccine for the sub-Saharan Africa. This is our commitment that it's not only for the population of our own country, but we are collaborating, trying to absorb the technologies which have been resourced in governmental labs such as NIH, FDA, CDC. And we are trying to develop these vaccines. For rotavirus vaccine, the license has been given to 6 of the developing country manufacturers. Japanese encephalitis vaccine is being manufactured in collaboration with a Chinese company. again with PATH and money from the Gates Foundation. We are making meningitis A vaccine. There is some grants which has come for the development of pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. So that clearly indicates that there is now increased awareness and also confidence in the international agencies to give this money to the developing country vaccine manufacturers where they can make these vaccines and make them available. As far as the AIDS vaccine is concerned, we have got some commitment with the IAV that as and when they will develop or identify a candidate which will be useful in India, that is for clade C, Serum Institute is identified as a place where it will be manufactured. And this is our commitment that we will make these vaccines available at the most affordable prices.
Kwame, can I jump in to your question? I think it's a very important question.
Two points, then you pick up that quickly. To remind you that you have facilitators. We want you to have questions. Please write them down and give them to your facilitators for the next section. The other point is for us on the panel, we've got just about 10 minutes left. We want to cover much. Let's be short and crisp in the answer. Take it over, Seth.
Yeah, so your question about developing countries is quite important. And one of the things that we did 10 years ago when IAVI as the first public-private partnership started is we said we're going to do the clinical trials in the phase one, the early clinical trials in Africa. A lot of people said, well, that doesn't make any sense. They won't do them well. Much better to do them right next to the places where the research is being done and the labs are good and all of that. And it's really been interesting what's happened. The quality of the work in Africa has been extraordinary. You know, we have labs that are now not only fully validated but accredited across Africa, and the results there are fabulous. And so scientists focused in their country, staying in their country, doing this important research. Same thing in India. Not only is India doing clinical trials and work, but recently we've begun to work with Indian biotech companies to try to do research and try to drive forward some of the key answers on these problems. So I think we have to think of all these diseases as a worldwide issue using the best talents that people have. Now, not every country will have manufacturing facilities or, you know, the right type of science facility, but what we need to do is reach out and bring all of them into this effort and make sure there's financing to do it.
Oh, great, great. Obviously, I have a bias in favor of Africa and the developing world, and that's where I'm from. And Uganda has got first rate, the Uganda Research Institute. I mean, long experience in polio research. South Africa, great experience in tuberculosis.
Uganda was the first accredited lab in sub-Saharan Africa, you know, working actually with BD, who's here and works with us on trying to get instruments to and working in these countries so they have the state of the art, which, again, years ago people would have said you couldn't do.
Alice, let me come back to you as we talk about innovative ways of getting vaccine on the market or financing. You spoke about advance purchase commitment, advance market commitment, AMC. I want you to explain that a little bit more and tell us to the extent there's some concerns that this may stifle competition and lessen the bargaining powers of countries that sign on. What steps are built into that to allay or assuage those concerns?
That's a good question, and let me just make a distinction between an advanced purchase commitment and an advanced market commitment. An advanced purchase commitment, when we actually started doing some of the initial work on this, is where we actually commit to a particular manufacturer to buy a particular quantity of a particular vaccine. That's not what we're doing here, specifically for the reasons that you articulated, which is that we thought that that would snuff off competition in the second and third generation products. And not really create the competitive forces to create a market that we were looking for. So we actually transitioned the concept to what we call an advanced market commitment. And there's three, I think, very important characteristics about it to address your questions. First of all, we are committed to buying a certain number of treatments overall, but we're not committing to a particular manufacturer that we're going to be doing that. In fact, the manufacturers have to qualify to be eligible to sell into the mechanism, and we're setting up various specification mechanisms and adjudication mechanisms to determine whether or not the candidate vaccines qualify. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the countries who might be interested in having the vaccine actually have to demand it. And so we're very concerned about the demand pull factor here, and that's something that's critical to the sustainability of the mechanism, but also what happens after the mechanism, because there has to be a viable market. Also, second and third generation candidates are absolutely eligible to apply to become to sell into the mechanism. So the idea is that we have tried to replicate as many of the competitive forces that you would normally see with the mechanism. So I hope that we're addressing the concerns that you raise.
Okay. And two more ways of attracting financing for development of vaccine, I'd like us to get into quickly, but you know, in very simple terms. And differential pricing, if you want to talk about it a little bit. Differential pricing, you know, you charge different prices in the developed world than you do in the developed world. And to the extent you have diseases that are only endemic in the developing world, so no market in the developed world to recoup losses, what's the alternative? Technology transfer, what's the downside? Any one of you jump on that if you
can. Do you want to?
Oh, no, go ahead.
To jump in on the differential pricing issue, you know, the tough issue, people think it's a problem in the South. The problem is not in the South. The problem is in the North. Because what the concern is that, I mean, the most efficient, if you go to a kind of an economic model, Ramsey pricing is the most efficient way to price a product. Ramsey pricing is basically differential pricing at all levels, tiered at all levels. And the reason is that the amount of money under the curve is larger than it would be if you just sold it at a very high price, because you have a much larger market. You also have, because you produce a lot more vaccines, the cost per vaccine drops, and therefore the profitability in your highest market is really high. So in an ideal world, you have, you know, just straight price tiering all the way down. The problem is, if you start with that initially and you say, well, we're going to sell it for $500 in the United States, which is the only market that is completely uncontrolled, and we're going to sell it for $2 in Uganda, then the worry is that, you know, policymakers might say, well, why is it $498 more in the United States? So it's getting that acceptance in the North that is required for us to really do the type of aggressive price tiering, which would be the most efficient way to make money anyway.
But also, increasingly, the diseases in the third world are not the diseases that are here. And so the problem that we face increasingly is actually creating an incentive for the diseases that exist in the third world. Because in order for tiered pricing to really work, you have to have essentially the same product. And that used to be true. I'm not a doctor, but that used to be true. It's not true any longer.
Let's talk quickly about technology transfer as an alternative. You know, open source licensing, voluntary licensing. What the prospects? What the downsides? Again, how you can attract people into that?
One of the issues is that there's a huge barrier to getting products approved. The safety profiles for vaccines that go into people who are not sick have to be extraordinary. So very large trials, you know, the manufacturing plants, very expensive. And so the barrier being huge means that it's much harder to have the standard ways you'd work with software and other things. And so the real challenge has been, are there ways now to think about having different types of trials, maybe having much smaller phase 3 trials and phase 4 trials that would be larger, and that would be a way to get products, you know, out faster.
Curtail the regulatory process a little bit, but building SIFTIC files in there.
The critical issue here is this is going into healthy. When a vaccine is approved, it's given to hundreds of millions of healthy people. And we've had some, you know, times where vaccines have done well in small clinical trials, and then they've found side effects later. And that has created enough concern that now people do very, I think one of Merck's last trials was 100,000 people in that trial. Well, that becomes very expensive. So, again, public-private partnership is critical, but we're going to need new mechanisms as we make vaccines, particularly for diseases as Alice has mentioned, that might be, you know, smaller volume, rare, and for regional areas.
Quickly, maybe in 15, 20 seconds, Suresh, one of the approaches to getting vaccines developed is to, well, at least one of the things being advocated is to lift tariffs, import duties for vaccines coming into the developing world. From the developed world, how would that affect you as a vaccine manufacturer in the third world?
No, but to the best of my knowledge, I think in most of the developing countries, there are no duties on the imports of the vaccines. Because if there are life-saving vaccines, there are no duties. So this is not very relevant.
All right, great. In the remaining time, we have 2 minutes. I'd like you to take, each of you, to take 15, 20 seconds and speak to any issues you haven't spoken to yet. Anything out there that you think needs to be done as far as vaccines concerned that's not been done, or any thought you'd like to throw out for our audience?
Closing remarks. Okay, I think one of the things that I'm so excited about being here at CGI is the people that have been brought together and the people in the room. And I think it's an opportunity to think big and take risk. I come from the private sector where we spend a lot of time taking risk and we feel pretty good about it. And one of the things that's unique about Gavi being a public-private partnership is that we bring everybody to the table. We've been at it for about 6 years. I think there are a lot of people from Gavi in the room, and I think that they can attest to the sort of value of the discussion. increasingly we're getting better at looking at the resources that we have, the internal people that we have, the voices at the table, and trying to break the mold. And I would encourage, particularly in a three-day, golden setting like this, people to think more about taking risk and not having quite so much process. So that would be my parting thought.
Thank you very much, Alice.
For the new vaccines, it's the long-termism. We tend to think of everything very short-term, and one of the problems is R&D is a long-term process. So we need better mechanisms, and this is something people can talk about, to support R&D for global public goods that is going to be in a stable way and is going to bring innovation in the private sector in so that we can solve some of these problems. There will be AIDS, TB, and malaria vaccines. The question is, how do we really accelerate it and make sure they stay on the priority agenda and don't get wiped away by other things?
Thank you, Seth. Suresh?
Yeah, I think one of my comments will be that most of the research which has been done is in the government laboratories, whether it is at FDA, CBER, or any of the universities. Now, and this research was used for the development of vaccine. Today, we are in a regime where IPR is a impediment for the developing country vaccine manufacturers. So now, when we see that with the initiatives like, say, Gavi, or even the Clinton Global Initiative, and the other money which has been already announced by the Netherlands, it will be a great idea to buy such technologies and make these technologies available to the developing country vaccine manufacturers.
Well, there you have it.
Thank you.
There you have it. Alice Albright.
They're calling to tell you to stop. That's what
that's what I thought was happening in the first instance. But Alice Albright, Seth Berkley, Suresh Yadav, talking to us about first how we can increase accessibility for vaccines that already exist, how we can get developing countries ready to use vaccines that will be in the pipeline over the next 5 years, what we can do to accelerate the development of vaccines we so desperately need for AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, and other diseases endemic in the tropics. It's been our pleasure having them on. We hope they not only educated you, but we hope you'll be spurred to take concrete actions. We end our discussion for now, and thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much. So clearly, this whole topic of vaccines holds a huge promise, and it's also one that has major issues and challenges associated with it, both in the area of expanding access as well as the development of new vaccines for some of the more difficult diseases that they are hoping to prevent through them. So we want to start to engage you folks in this conversation now. Our panelists are going to take a break. They will be back to share more thoughts with you. But again, this is the part of the program where we actually want to start getting your thoughts, your creativity, and especially your strategic thinking about this question about how do we expand access, how do we foster innovation. So what I'd like you to do at your tables is to have a conversation for the next 25 or 30 minutes. Conversation is, what do you think are two or three key actions that can be taken, whether by individuals or especially by organizations, government, business, partnerships, and so on, two or three key actions that can be taken in order to address these challenges, take advantage of the opportunities? And for each of these actions, what do you think the goal should be? Who do you think should be involved? And what would be a concrete next step to be taken? Now, I do notice that there's some tables that don't have many folks. To make this really a rich conversation, I want to encourage that there are at least five or six folks at every table. So if there's just two of you plus a facilitator, I want to encourage you, join another table for this. I think you'll get more out of your time. Thanks very much. Have a great conversation.